I just went to her and said, what am I supposed to say in introduction to you? And she said, whatever. So what I'm going to do is say, here's Rosemary, and anything she wants us to know about herself, she can tell us.
Well, it's a great pleasure to be here with you today, and I'm sure the meal is the main attraction. It was for me, in any way. Very, very fine meal and good company. You know, usually when I speak to a group, it's tell people the advantages of a career in veterinary medicine. But I think that's probably not going to be a real popular topic here today. So I asked a few people, what sort of topic should I speak about? And to be honest, most of them couldn't think of anything that I would have to say that would be of interest to anyone here. So I asked John, and he said, talk about your journey. Talk about your journey. So really, I think probably I would rather be here having you speak to me, because there's so much wisdom gathered here today, and the older I get, the more I realize how little I know. But specifically, what I need advice about today is about retirement. I feel I should be planning this next phase, and I want to know how to be useful without getting in the way. But perhaps I should begin, as John Nelson had suggested, by telling you about my journey thus far, and then, when you know me a little better, you'll be better able to tell me where to go. So, today, I am many things. Some of them I'm happy about. I am a Christian, a woman, a gardener, a wife, a mother, a veterinarian, an entrepreneur. There are also things I'm less happy about, but I'm still working on those. I graduated as a veterinarian in 1979, and most groups I talk about can only imagine 1979, but I think this group probably has a fairly good understanding of 1979, so I'm on good ground there. I've lived and worked in Saskatchewan, Alberta, BC, Ontario, and traveled in every province of Canada and many other places as well. Derek and I moved to Regina in 1984 and raised our children here. I set up a house call practice in 1995, and since then I have traveled around Regina doing veterinary care for dogs and cats in their own homes. Okay. Well, that wasn't the 25 minutes that John was aiming, so I'll give you a little more detail. The home that I grew up in valued education. It was second only to the Christian faith. Faith came first, of course, intentionally taught, and more important, openly lived. The United Church has always been strong in the social gospel, so I learned the parables. I learned Jesus' scorn for those who tithe, meat, and rue, but neglect justice and the love of God. We spent a lot of time looking after those less fortunate, the clear implication being that we were the more fortunate. Blessed with the love of family and boundless opportunities, we lived very well in every area that counted. Money just didn't count for much. At a time when everyone in Canada was seeking the white picket fence and two-car garage, my father lived below the poverty line until he was 55. And after that, turned down every raise that would have raised him above it, because he didn't think it was important for a Christian minister. And we learned that if we could live very well at the poverty level, then we could also live very well on 10% less than that. The pursuit of justice and the love of God did not mean that they neglected the tithe. Stewardship was not an annual campaign, it was a way of living. And it was made clear to us that the greatest treasure of which we were stewards was our own lives. Which brings me to education. My parents were of a generation where few finished high school, And yet my mother had her ARCT, her ACTM, qualified as a teacher through normal school and a year at U of S. My father had three children and four university degrees. I have the distinction of having less post-secondary education and fewer university degrees than anyone in my family. In high school, I toyed with a variety of options. I considered medicine, but I didn't have much experience with it because I'd never really been sick. However, I had had pets, and sometimes my hamsters got sick, and when I took them to the vet, he said, "Sorry, there's nothing we can do. Sign here, please, and I'll put him out of his misery." So I signed, but I wondered, is there actually nothing we can do? Or is it just that I'm only a child and hamsters are 8 cents a piece at Woolworths? If I was a vet, I would know how to fix them all, right? I loved science, enjoyed academics. We lived in Saskatoon, and the only vet college in Western Canada was there at the University of Saskatchewan. It seemed like the obvious choice. So I enrolled in the College of Arts and Sciences with a major in biology and started the prerequisites for veterinary medicine. 2 years of pre-vet and 4 years in WCVM itself earned me a DVM and the right to call myself Dr. Ward. A moment of intense pride. But as we all know, pride goeth before a fall. And I soon learned that veterinary medicine did not occupy a place of high prominence in our society. People would smile and say, "Dr. Ward, where do you practice?" And I would say proudly, "Island Veterinary Hospital." And they would say, "Oh." They tittered. Not a real doctor. Even at work, where you had to believe that people would have some respect for veterinary medicine, they looked at my age and gender and, with something between horror and disbelief, clasped Fluffy to their breast, stepped back from the table and said, "Where's Dr. Lamb?" Soon enough, I got over being too young, and women became more common in all the professional roles. But somehow, still, while the word medicine invokes a picture of knowledge and technology and respect, the word veterinary makes us think of dog poo. Which amazes me, because veterinary medicine is absolutely fascinating to me. The range and depth of knowledge in veterinary medicine reaches far beyond the capacity of any one person or any one lifetime. And learning is the most fun thing ever. The challenge of knowledge itself is the first step. Learning about structure and function, and then the complex interrelationships between organs and all the subtle checks and balances. If I had not believed in God before I began this study, I certainly would have by the end of it. And after studying horse, cow, dog, cat, pig, learning details of anatomy, physiology, endocrinology, pathology, and finding that they were all so remarkably similar to each other and to ourselves, I realized that we should not be so proud of our otherness. The differences between us and animals are much smaller than the similarities. Animals break bones, they get periodontal disease, diabetes, emphysema, allergies, mental illness. I suspect that if we were not so narrowly focused on ourselves, we would be much farther along the path to understanding ourselves. By 1980, veterinary science had identified several viruses that cause cancer in most of the species that we deal with, and had vaccines to prevent those cancers. We're still not even looking at viral causes for cancer in people. It just happens. By 1980, But in the late 80s, diabetes was unknown in cats. But with changes in diet and lifestyle, it became a major problem and treatable only with twice daily injections of insulin. But in less than 10 years, there was a cat food on the market which would reverse diabetes and allow many diabetic cats to live their disease controlled by diet alone. And just as we learn a lot about studying our own we could learn a lot about our own diseases by studying animals, we can also learn a lot by studying their behaviors. As a vet, I have to be gentle with my patients, or they bite me. And although I learned that very few dogs are actually aggressive, most are fear biters, I have to relieve that fear, or I can't go anywhere else in dealing with them. Cats are, as the saying goes, a different breed of cat. But when I go into a multiple cat household where humans have litter box issues, and I watch the interactions of felines, it looks perilously similar to a group of grade 7 girls. And despite the fact that many see veterinary medicine as a way of avoiding people, I never get a chance to work with animals unless I can convince people to bring their animals to me. So I learn quite a lot about people behavior as well. And I have met a lot of really wonderful people, but also a few fear biters and bullies. So, did I ever learn about the hamsters? Well, yes. And in doing so, I learned another hard lesson. The technology of medicine can do amazing things in any species. But the reality is, hamsters have a lifespan of about 1,000 days. And after that, the systems begin to break down. If he has a tumor, we can do surgery to remove it. If she has kidney stones, we can remove them, break them down, perhaps even try a different diet so they don't form as readily. But if she is already 1,010 days old, and we embark on a course of treatment that will require 2 months' recovery, is that really the best option? So, as a veterinarian, I have learned a lot about humility and letting go. Age is inevitable, and so is decline. And I realize that though my species is quite long-lived, I have to recognize that I am probably in the decline. So, I think my job now is to support and encourage rather than to accomplish and direct. But somehow that looks a lot harder than when I thought I knew everything and could fix anyone. So, can anybody tell me where I should go from here? When I was putting this together, I spent more hours than you would think listening to me. But I kept getting diverted because I would be on the computer and I would be thinking about animals and better. And I would get into those YouTube videos about cats. And I really could probably more profitably have come and just set up a screen and showed you a whole lot of YouTube videos about cats. But I think you can find your way onto the internet for yourself and look up those videos for yourself. But I might just suggest that if you're actually interested in cute little stories about kittens and puppies, there was a very good article on the Nature of Things about a week ago about dogs and the ability to communicate. And I think, again, we can learn a lot about communication from dogs. We tend to think that we have it all over the other species because of our ability to communicate. we laud our facility with language, but I know lots of dogs who have a good grasp of the English language. They understand 20, 50, 100 words. My dog knows every single possible synonym for walk. And when I was talking to my daughter about buying a car, he went, car. Every time I said the word, he went for the door. And very few people here would be able to identify any word in dog. So just think about that next time you're talking to a dog, and maybe listening would be a little better option.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ward. Would you be willing to entertain any questions if there are? Anyone have questions?
Anybody have any answers?
Are we all?